SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races, and tomorrow, the kickoff to Del Mar, and no better way to kick off the kickoff than visiting with Jay Privman, who enjoys the home game the next couple of months. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, as we both kind of prepare for the backyard activities, as it were, Del Mar and Saratoga this week. And you could just, it's amazing, Jay, how it just lifts spirits. Not that they needed to be lifted after a fascinating Triple Crown season.
No, it's always fun. I mean, these summer meets are great. The quality of the racing's terrific. You get energized by the on-track crowds as well that you see every day. So it's really a lot of fun. And, you know, as you were just alluding to, for you, Saratoga is very close to your home, and for me, Del Mar is very close to my home, so it's nice when the circus comes to town.
One of the major players, or at least one of the major storylines, before we talk about the Del Mar meet specifically, and of course your important juvenile preview, the update yesterday, your conversation with Bob Baffert, and you put out a picture of Justify being hand-walked. Jay, bring everybody up to speed on where things stand with the Triple Crown winner.
So just what happened was yesterday, Del Mar Publicity organized a sort of a media meet-and-greet for the local television crews to come on out at the same time and kind of do one rolling interview after another with Baffert for their morning shows. But preceding that, he had sort of a group interview. And at that time, I mean, we've all sort of been watching what's transpiring with this horse and trying to read the tea leaves. And, you know, it didn't look like he was going to make something this summer, but this was the first time it had been specifically said that he wouldn't run in the Pacific Classic and he wouldn't run in the Travers. And he said that they're still going day to day with him. And he really didn't talk about any specific races for him. And I just wrote yesterday that it's just becoming, I mean, we know the situation with this horse. He's not to race after the Breeders' Cup Classic. He is going to stud. That we know is going to happen with him. So you start doing the math. Okay, if he's got a minor issue, which he had the filling. He went back to, you know, a couple of weeks ago. He went back to the track after it calmed down, and then it resurfaced. So now they're waiting a few weeks to just see where it's at. But you start doing the math on and looking at the calendar, and you know, there's the potential here to just run out of time to get a prep race in prior to the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I couldn't imagine he'd go into the Classic off workouts alone. And when you combine that with his obvious extreme value, being the most successful son of the highly prized but now belated and having passed Scat Daddy, I mean, he's an incredibly valuable horse. And we know that Windstar's business model is to develop stallions. I mean, we look at what happened with Battle of Midway, for instance, last year, who won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and then went to stud. Now, he's back in training because he turned out to be subfertile, but that's part of their business model. I mean, they've even said it in the, you might remember in the post-race press conference after the Kentucky Derby, something was mentioned about how Windstar operates, and Elliot Walden said, and rightly so, that they treated it not only as a sport, but as a business. That's how they run it. So I'm using that as sort of the context of like, okay, where are we headed with this horse? And when you start looking at all the factors right now, you know, it appears that there's a good chance that they're just going to run out of time to find a way back before he would be going to stud. You know, a lot of times horses have minor injuries that, I'll give you an example right out of the Baffert barn, a horse like McKenzie, you know, have minor injuries that if the horse is going to be racing at four, you just give them the necessary time and then they grow up and come back and then, you know, so that's to me what appears to be going on with Justify. They've been obviously a little bit opaque about specifics on things because I think until everything's resolved, they just don't want to say anything with specificity. But you know, just reading between the lines here, it just appears it's kind of you can sort of anticipate where this thing might be headed.
And I mentioned earlier this morning, in anticipation of your visit, that you know anybody that saw your piece could kind of get that intonation, basically, Jay. You were communicating quite a bit with that suggestion, and I one of the most outlandish suggestions is the people saying, well, they never intended to run him. They were never going to run him after. This is all an elaborate scheme, which I just roll my eyes.
Well, well, everything's a big conspiracy these days, right? I mean, everybody's working against and coordinated fashions against one another, right? So, I mean, I know that that's preposterous. I know that there was the initial intention after the Belmont to have a campaign that would have been potentially mirroring what American Pharoah had. The Haskell was definitely in the initial plans, but you have to deal with what happens, and the horse has a minor problem, and you can't go on with him. And when he's, you know, if he was perfectly sound, I'm certain he would have run, but he had an issue. They're dealing with it now, and then when you start doing the math as to what the known situation is with him regarding going to stud, and you look at what, you know, we're now at, into mid-July, there's the potential here to just run out of time. But, you know, it's very easy to have opinions on where horses should run and the intentions of people when you're just sitting in front of your computer and not really on the ground and being around the horse. And I think maybe people should give a little bit of credence to those who are out there, you know, beating the backstretch and asking questions and trying to actually know what's going on. And maybe you should just rely on that reporting. It might have you be a little more understanding of situation.
Well put. And turn our attention with the Justify summer plans. Pretty certain right now in terms of, you know, no assignments. And I suppose for those that are looking to the Haskell and Travers and Jim Dandy, it makes for West Virginia Derby, further down the Pennsylvania Derby. You know, it'll make for plenty of intrigue and I suppose maybe even fuller fields than might have been assembled with his presence. So we'll look down the road for those. Meanwhile, we can look right till tomorrow, Jay, and a terrific kickoff to the Del Mar summer with a great card. Only one division of the Oceanside, but that's okay.
No, they had 20 entered for that race, and they decided to just use one strong race of it. Four horses were excluded. They'll come back in an allowance race. So they drew 16 with 14 in the main body of the race and two also eligible. And it's a nice wide-open race. The card has big fields. They already entered for Thursday, the second day of the meet, and the fields that day were pretty strong as well. There were a number of full fields on that day. And today they'll be taking entries for here for Friday as well. So, you know, so far, it's, you know, I mean, obviously it's early, but everybody wants to run at Del Mar. The purses are the highest on this circuit, and it's a great place to win, as analogous to Saratoga. I mean, if you race on the East Coast, there's nothing like winning a race at Saratoga, and it's the same here on the West Coast when it comes to Del Mar.
Another parallel, certainly, the two-year-old racing and the turf racing, and coming off the three weekends of Los Al, gave all the turf horses on the Southern California circuit, gave them a chance to freshen up, and so we can expect lots of good turf racing. And the two-year-olds, let's get to one of the most anticipated pieces in turf journalism, Jay Privman's West Coast two-year-old preview. Clip and save, mark it down, put them in your virtual stable, because there'll be a lot of stake horses come off of this list, Jay.
Well, it's something we try and do every year for our readers, is to sort of canvas the backside and, you know, talk to trainers, talk to clockers, watch videos on XBTV, and try and put together a list of horses that look like they have promise, that are going to run early at the meet. The one thing I do try and limit the list to are horses that I know are going to run here. I mean, there's some horses who are maybe just getting started who people really like, but if they're not going to make the meet, I'm not going to be writing about them. This is for gambling purposes for Del Mar. It's not a, oh, let's take a look at who might be a nice three-year-old in January. So that's the point of this, and there's, you know, a number of really highly regarded prospects, and there's always going to be, as I wrote in the story, there's always the usual suspects who we know we're going to have deep benches. You know, Baffert obviously has, you know, a ton of two-year-olds to run. Hollendorfer, Peter Miller, Doug O'Neill, and Baffert's group is particularly strong, and so is Hollendorfer's. He looks like he's got a lot of really, really good two-year-olds. But one of the things I like to try and do is see if I can find some trainers who you might not necessarily have on your radar, but who might have either big numbers this year or might have one or two horses that might be pretty precocious that you might want to keep your eye on. You know, Simon Callahan, his two-year-old numbers have really increased over the last couple of years. He did win the debutante last year with Moonshine Memories, and he looks like he's got a really strong bunch of two-year-olds. He's already run a couple of them already, like owning Colt, who won on debut and is going to come back in the Best Pal the middle of next month. But he's got several others, particularly a filly named Dreaming of You, who looks like she might be really good. And then you've got Keith DeSormo, who has big numbers of two-year-olds. He's not usually known for winning first time out, but he's had a couple that have run already and haven't won, but should run second time, and you really have to give those horses a strong look because they usually go forward. But he's got some other horses who look like they might do by the end of the meet when the distances of the races for the two-year-olds start to increase. Dick Mandela's got several that he likes, but then, you know, you find the guys that are kind of below the radar a little bit more. And one person who really stood out as I was doing the research on this for having a lot of what seemed to be forward two-year-olds is Neil Drysdale. He's got a Munnings filly named Hello Bubbles who should run early this season. He just has several two-year-olds who really came around. And he's not a guy who, you know, when you're usually sitting down to do your handicapping, you'd look at, you know, just the printed dope and go like, well, of course Neil Drysdale will be fine with two-year-olds. It's just not usually what he's known for, but, you know, you have to report on what you find, and that's, he's somebody to just keep your eye on this meet. And then, you know, the guy that you just had on a little bit ago, Michael McCarthy, he already had a debut winner among fillies in Sturd, who's going to run in the Sorrento, and he's got a Violence filly named Vibrant, who we should see later on at the meet. And then there's just, you know, some one-offs of a few people who might be worth looking at. For instance, Patty Gallagher's got a Cairo Prince colt named Harmon, who looks like he's got some talent. And Mark Glass got a Bernardini named Benny the Jet. And David Hoffman's has a filly named Honey from the South, who he really likes. You know, so they might not have the numbers that other barns do. They're obviously not in the same category of a Baffert or a Hollendorfer, but they might have one or two that are good enough, and that's really, you know, sometimes all it takes. So I just try and go through and find some of the ones that look like they've got promise and list maybe the best of the ones that I know of from the bigger barns, and then try and hopefully find a few nuggets from the smaller barns, and hopefully it keeps us in action for the 7 weeks here.
Well, and it is tricky because you look through And I was encouraging people, Jay, to look through the winner's book, simulcast daily. And for those of you that are preparing for tomorrow at Del Mar and for the meet, and same for Saratoga, the winner's book has the race-by-race summaries, the top three finishers, the conditions, the winner, the buyer, the price, and the trainer and jock. And it, for me, it's invaluable to kind of go through, and you know, particularly at the beginning of meets where trainers know that there's certain races that are going to be on the in the condition book. Very unique circumstance for Del Mar and Saratoga, and trainers, they start seeing horses that they know they're going to point for a race in whatever, the first third of these meets. And it's notable. I mean, last year, Vladimir Serin, you know, came busting out of the gate. Peter Miller has traditionally gotten off to big starts. And you get a few hints. Gary Sherlock has, you know, broken the maidens at big prices with older horses, but also with the occasional two-year-old.
Right. I mean, like Show It and Mow It.
Last year. There you go.
To use Gary Sherlock as an example. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, fortunately, there's, you know, there are a number of good two-year-olds in a number of different barns. I mean, again, the strength is always going to be most likely with the stronger barns, because they're just, it's a numbers game, and when you've got, you know, 25 two-year-olds, it's a lot. You've got a better chance of coming up with one or two that are really good as opposed to the guy who's got two. But we try and find, you know, the best ones of those bigger barns, and hope, like I said, hopefully the nuggets in some of the smaller barns. I mean, tomorrow, for instance, the two-year-old, the first two-year-old maiden race of the meet, is only going 5/8, but there's a few in there that look like they can run. And I know the Hollendorf is very high on Brill. Medaglia d'Oro filly cost $1 million as a yearling, and I've watched tapes of her works, and she looks like she's really, really good. And he did pretty well with the Medaglia d'Oro filly here as a two-year-old about three summers ago. She turned out okay. Her name was Songbird. So, you know, there's certain, and she won about the first, I think it was the first or maybe the second maiden race of the meet, and came back and won the debutante that summer. But to your point that you made a few moments ago about picking spots and whatnot, you know, in the very first condition book, which covers the first 2+ weeks of the meet, there's four sprint races for open two-year-old fillies and three for colts at various distances. For instance, the filly race tomorrow is at 5 furlongs, but there's one on the weekend for 6 furlongs. And a lot of trainers will, I mean, that's obviously a big factor in where they want to debut, because if you think you have a really precocious one, then 5/8 is going to be just fine for them, you'll go in that. But if you think you have a horse that might want a little bit more distance, you might wait a few days and run in the 6 furlong race. So those are just some of the things that go into the planning for trainers when it comes to the having their horses debut the first part of the meet here.
Well, and for those looking for some other hints, I'll mention that the actual, beside the open company race, the fourth tomorrow, state bred fillies going 5/8. And going back to last year, Brian Corner on opening day and Sal Gonzalez on day two, Corner and Gonzalez are represented in this first race, the fourth, Square Peggy, a Square Eddie filly for Blinkers On. She leaves from the three hole, and Jackie Star for Gonzalez. Last year, Sal Gonzalez at, I think, 18-1 on the second day with a similar race. So there's little flares that are kind of, you know, dot the landscape, Jay. It's what makes these meets so much fun.
Yeah, no, it's really fun to see all these, you know, newcoming horses get ready to run here, and it's always exciting to see if any of them turn out to go on and do something nationally. The Del Mar Futurity and the Debutante both have produced really top class runners over the years, and that's really part of the great fun of this meet. And it's the same thing at Saratoga, to see who might develop into being the horses that are going to run in races like the Hopeful at the end of the meet, and then they go on and potentially be Breeders' Cup quality horses. And it's just the same thing out here.
Well, and of course, the Breeders' Cup meet last year ended in the end of November, and everybody back to the Seaside Oval. Jay, beside the two-year-olds, a couple of the calendar and the meet highlights. The San Diego will give rise, of course, to to the Pacific Classic. A couple of names and things that you're already tracking and looking forward to.
Well, to your point, we'll go in sort of chronological order. So the San Diego entries for that will be taken tomorrow. The race is Saturday, as you mentioned. It's the prep for the Pacific Classic, and it looks like Accelerate will go in the San Diego. He'll turn back from a mile and a quarter. He won the Santa Anita Gold Cup at Santa Anita. His last start, as you know, he won the Santa Anita Handicap earlier in the year. He'll use this as a bridge to the Pacific Classic, which is obviously his main goal, and he's certainly a much better horse now than he was a year ago when he ran in those races. He's just, it looks like it's obvious from his two wins at Santa Anita earlier this year that a mile and a quarter is certainly within his grasp. Looks like Dabster and Muktahij will represent the Baffert Barn in the San Diego Handicap. City of Light was nominated, and he worked yesterday, but he's not going to run. It looks like he's going to make his next start at Saratoga, and they're still deciding whether they want to go around one turn or two with him. So until they decide that, but he's not going to run in the San Diego. And then obviously those horses and several others will move on and be the ones for the Pacific Classic. You know, the biggest race, I think, the first 2 weeks of the meet in terms of, well, not necessarily the biggest race, but the best horse that we'll see the first 2 weeks of the meet would be Unique Bella, who will run in the Clement Hirsch a week from Sunday. And they're not going to have many to run against her. I mean, she usually scares off most of her rivals anyway. And, you know, one who might have run against her is Paradise Woods, but it looks like she's going to be entered today for the Osanitas on grass on Friday and make her grass debut. And that takes one fairly significant horse who could have run against Unique Bella out of the equation. So there's not too many who want to run against her, but she's obviously an exciting horse to watch. She's the champion female sprinter last year, and she'll be running two turns in the Clement Hirsch a week from Sunday. So those are some of the, you know, a few of the big ones. The Eddie Reed this Sunday for grass horses looks like it's going to come up a really neat race with It's in the Post, who's won four of his last five starts. They're going to cut him back to a mile and an eighth. He'll obviously move on to the Del Mar Handicap at a mile and three eighths, and that's in his wheelhouse. I was joking with Jeff Mullins when he told me he was going to run him in the Eddie Reed. I said, oh, so you feel like sprinting him this time, huh? Because he just gets warmed up when he's going a mile and an eighth. But he's won going a mile and an eighth. In fact, earlier this year, he won the San Gabriel. So he can handle it, and it's a good bridge to move him on to the Del Mar Handicap. And he's a fun horse to watch. I mean, he just fires every time. And one of the neat things about this week's race is that Tyler Bayes will be back on him. He had to not ride him last time because he was still shaking off the effects of a spill. And you might remember it was a pretty emotional scene that day because he was out there for the race and was rooting the horse home, but was talking about how he really wished he would have been the one on his back. But he did the right thing. He knew he wasn't 100%, and he loves the horse, and he knew that it was best for somebody else to take over for that day. But Tyler will be back on him on Saturday. So those are some of the things the first week and a half or so of the meet here to keep an eye on.
We'll also mention three Breeders' Cup win and you're in highlights, two on the sprint front, the Bing Crosby a week from Saturday, and the Pat O'Brien later in the meet, and also the Del Mar Handicap, the grade two for the Milers.
Right. No, there's five Breeders' Cup win and you're in races at the meet. The Bing Crosby, as you mentioned, which is a week from Saturday, and it looks like, speaking of Breeders' Cup, it looks like Roy H. will go in that race.
Cool.
And American Anthem is looking at that race as well. So that could come up a really, really good race. The Clement Hirsch we were just talking about with Unique Bella, that's a win and you're in for the Distaff. The Pacific Classic is obviously a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. The Del Mar Handicap, the race that It's in the Post will be pointed to after he runs in the Eddie Reed, that's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf. And then, as you mentioned, the Pat O'Brien, which is a 7/8 race, but is a win and you're in for the Dirt Mile. That's later in the meet. So there's five races during the meet here that are winning your in races.
Excellent. And, you know, Jay, one question. I don't know if I've asked you this before, and I don't know if there's a distinct historic answer to this, but, of course, the Del Mar Derby near the end of the meet for the three-year-olds. And I'm just curious, why did Del Mar, or how is it that Del Mar never really had a dirt, you know, a distinctive dirt program for 3 year olds, that it gravitated toward the turf?
I think it just, I mean, back when Del Mar was in its earlier days, I mean, the better horses didn't even come here. They went to Chicago in the summer. Like, that's where Charlie Whittingham would go in the 60s, as an example. You know, and then as Del Mar became a more prominent national track through the late 70s and then really taking off in the 80s and then going forward from there, you know, by then you've already got the Jim Dandy and the Haskell and the Travers, and then you've got races like the West Virginia Derby, and as you were just talking with Michael McCarthy a little bit ago, I mean, last weekend you had the Indiana Derby the same day as the Los Alamitos Derby. There's so many, the Los Alamitos Derby obviously being out here, but all those other races I mentioned being rich, lucrative races that are out of town. I just think they felt like they would just be diluting the pool of horses, and you're not going to put up another $1 million race out here for three-year-olds. It's just unlikely that you would get horses to ship in for it when you've got races like the Travers and the Haskell and races like that back east, and even the Pennsylvania Derby. So they thought it would be more prudent to try and establish a grass program out here, beginning with the Oceanside, which is a restricted race, but then with the La Jolla, and then finally the Del Mar Derby. And, you know, the Del Mar Derby was run on the dirt, you know, in its earliest days. But it's been, you know, it's been a grass race for since 1970. I mean, the last dirt winner of it was Orbit Ruler in 1969. So that's sort of the Cliff Notes history. But I mean, if you looked at who the dirt winners were of the Del Mar Derby, I mean, some of them are names you'd heard of, but there's quite a few that are just kind of UFOs, and they just decided, I think, that the better move here was to make it a grass program for the three-year-olds. And with the Pacific Classic, you know, three-year-olds can run in the Pacific Classic and they get weight, so there's the opportunity there for, if you've got a really good three-year-old and you want to run here, you can do that. But to try and compete with a race like the Travers and put on another $1 million race here for three-year-olds only, I mean, let's just play this out a little bit more. I mean, what would that field look like this year out here for $1 million? I mean, you'd be giving away a lot of money to horses who probably shouldn't be running for that kind of money. I think based on the landscape of what there is nationally, this was the correct approach that they had to take.
Well, this was a loaded question, and I had an ultimate intent for it, because for those of you that don't have it and want to add something to your bookshelf, Del Mar at 75, Jay Privman, and most fascinatingly, his cousin Barry Myers photography, it is a wonderful addition to anybody's collection. The incredible photography that Del Mar, the vistas and the angles and everything that Barry did, and then Jay's writing. And you can find it at Amazon. It's still in a lot of racetrack gift shops, and you can find it poking around the internet. I got a copy, and I love it.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, it came out a few years ago, but certainly proud of it, and, you know, sort of takes you through the life, a day in a life at Del Mar, but tells the history of the track, hopefully people enjoy it.
You know, it's also almost time. Isn't it time for you to do a revised version of your Breeders' Cup? Your
yeah,
big Breeders' Cup
book? Yeah, I talked to the guy who published that book, the Breeders' Cup book that we did, and that it came out in 2001, so it's been a long time since that history of the Breeders' Cup book came out. The guy who quarterbacked that, Leonard Lusky, who's now very much involved with the Secretariat.com website, well, we've talked about maybe doing something as we get closer to maybe the 40th anniversary of the Breeders' Cup or something like that. But yeah, I think that book has held up in terms of just looking at the early days of the Breeders' Cup and some of the big races from, you know, the first decade plus, and especially the historical stuff in there, because I mean, I was able to interview people who regretfully have since passed, you know, like John Gaines and John Nehrud, and them telling their memories of the formative years of the Breeders' Cup, and how not, you know, everybody was on board with that concept back in the early 80s. And I'm glad that I was able to do that then, you know, because unfortunately those people have since passed, but at least their, you know, their recollections are still preserved. So, yeah, I think you're right. It probably would be about high time in a few years to do an updated version of that book.
Well, we will get updates from Del Mar with Jay Privman regularly as the season starts off tomorrow. And a great way to get things going. And we're going to keep in this vein previewing because we have the rare Privman-Serling double, Jay.
Well, I'm glad that you had me on first because that would be a really difficult act to follow. So say hi to Andy for me. I got to run and go to work and have a good time at Saratoga this summer.
Jay, I appreciate it. Home game for Jay Privman. One push, one dining push, Jay. Oh, I think we lost him. We did. All right, we'll get Jay next week with his favorites. We know a lot of his favorites. He went over them for Breeders' Cup, but we'll get updates. In fact, there's already been an avalanche of responses to Hammer the other day that people adding to Rick's essential list of places to go before and after the races at Del Mar. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, 90 in, 90 to come. Andy Serling is going to join us on this stormy Tuesday, upstate New York. And Saratoga will draw today. We'll have our fields as you're handicapping Del Mar for tomorrow. You'll be able to start handicapping Saratoga for Friday. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wake up, kindness is my life.
We're back at the races. 25 minutes to the top of the hour. Just off a Jay Privman Del Mar preview, and what a great companion opportunity as Andy Serling joins us in advance of the draw today for opening day at Saratoga. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. I don't think I could keep up with Jay. He's much more informed than I am.
Well, Jay said he was glad that I led with him. He said, because you're a tough act to follow.
Well, that's also true.
Well, you know, for those of you, we could make this a really quick visit. I could tell everybody, go to YouTube and watch our conversation from Sunday on Capital OTB.
That's a great idea. So I'm going to go. Talk to you later. Really, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I knew there was some reason I did that.
I could just trot that out because we had a.
That's a great idea. Seriously, that's really good. I'm going to get in the shower. I'll talk to you later.
Let me have a second to stop laughing. We had a great discussion, I thought, on Sunday. Just sort of generic themes. Generic themes about Saratoga. And I'm going to ask you just, you know, what you enjoy the most. Of course, you grew up, for the most part, in Saratoga. So it's special to be here.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about being here is I don't have to come on your show every week. I think if I had to boil it down to one thing, not having to do the Steve Bick show every Tuesday, that's probably one of the highlights of Saratoga. Maybe not the highlight, but close. It's the first one that comes to mind.
Well, but you make up for it by having to do OTB appearances.
As infrequently as possible.
Well, you certainly kept busy. And, you know, one thing that I'll remind people, and I haven't mentioned it in the lead up to this week, but I think, Andy, one of the things that people may not realize until the meet gets rolling, going back to 6 days a week, it is taxing.
Yeah, I'm not going to start out the meet by complaining about the things that make more difficult.
I don't.
Yeah. You know, in Saratoga, I mean, you know the number of people. There are very few racing fans out there that wherever they are, if they're not in Saratoga, that aren't saying, boy, I what I'd give to be able to spend the next 7 weeks in Saratoga.
Sure.
So I'm starting out, as they say, starting out with an advantage. You know, I'm here. I'm in the greatest. If you're a racing fan, especially in this country, but a racing fan, it doesn't matter where you are, the planet you're on. It's hard to imagine a better place to be for basically the months of July and August. It's just magic. It's whether it's, you know, the downtown with the bars and restaurants and people that, you know, are interested in talking about racing, that genuinely love racing. It's sort of a daily reunion of people that come to the Saratoga that you really don't see throughout the year. Maybe you hear from them, but for the most part or at all, you don't see the best horses in training, the best riders, the best trainers, at least, you know, from the East Coast. Obviously, we don't have the top people from the West Coast, though many of them do appear at different times during the meet. It's a beautiful track. It's a beautiful setting, you know, as opposed to taking public transportation somewhere between an hour and a half to work every day. I walk a few minutes to get to the track. It's heaven, you know. It's the best place you could possibly imagine being. So to not going to discuss that we race 6 days a week or how long the days are, who cares? I mean, the fact that you're in Saratoga, I'm extremely fortunate to be here. I'm fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, and I can't think of any situation. I mean, listen, before I worked here, I missed one race because of a death in the family between 2003 and then 2007, those 5 years before I was working here. And before that, I missed very few days. When I did, I suffered through each and every one of them. So to be able to be here and work at NYRA, it's a blessing.
And I'm not suggesting that as a grouse by any means. I bring it up because it is a factor, and that players, in terms of bankroll elasticity, and you know the picking spots, and you know getting, you know, this is really the only place left in the game that has a 6 day a week run, and
to some degree, I think it does require a little bit of a mental adjustment in terms of approach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, for me personally.
Well, it's, I don't, you know, it's not, so much of what we do in racing is personal, and how people approach and their personal is how they do it. You know, it's a long run, you know, it's a 40 days, it goes by quickly, but it's, listen, it's, you know, it's close to, you know, it's what, about 14% of the year, right? So racing,
yeah.
I mean, and more than that number of days. So it's a significant run, and it's going to, you know, be some days that are tougher than others, but there are opportunities galore up here. And depends how you play it and how you look at it and how often you're playing. That's, you know, a personal thing. But to me, it's just a tremendous daily challenge, and a daily challenge to try to be successful playing. And clearly that's important to any player, how you do at the end of the meet, how you hold out. And to me, it's just, it's great to look at these cards because, you know, like anything, there's going to be races that, you know, sort of not great or a little confusing, but there's going to be plenty of races that, every day there will be races that you can really dig into and uncover lots of information. And for me, if I feel as though I've imparted some interesting tidbits here and there, then I'm doing my job as well as I can. But, you know, as far as picking winners, you hope to do the best you can do, but knowing that there's a high likelihood that you'll look foolish a lot of the time, but that's okay. You're not doing this job and you're not doing it well if you're not looking foolish some of the time. And that goes for everybody here. There are top riders that look foolish sometimes. There are top trainers that look foolish sometimes. And there's certainly handicappers that look foolish sometimes as well, more often than not.
Well, when you're looking at fuller fields than we're used to on, you know, on hopefully intense cards, you fold in the mystery of the two-year-olds that require extra work. I mean, I think this all goes into, you know, what I was hinting at. I mean, when you've got typically two maiden races a day on average, and invariably they're either lightly raced or unraced, and there's pedigree work to do.
2 year olds,
yeah,
or
the 2 year olds
in general.
2 year olds. 2 year olds.
Well, I mean, those are not races that I consider, you know, just put up some pedigrees, maybe watch some sales works, but most of the time,
right,
just guessing. And obviously, you know, certain trainers rate to, and whether it's Todd Fletcher or Chad Brown or other, you know, trainers, probably going to have some of the favors of those. But there's a lot going on. I mean, like anything, you're going through each race as a puzzle and trying to decipher it. There are a lot of challenges ahead. I look forward to every one of them.
Are there spots that you find yourself, you know, more inclined to bet, Andy, that, and it's hard because you're preparing for the broadcasts and to be able to get, you know, your own bets in, that's never easy. But up here, is there anything different that you watch for?
No, I'm not that guy. I don't handicap Saratoga different than I handicap Belmont or Aqueduct or Gulfstream or any other track I might look at. I mean, Saratoga, I imagine that you know, you can say you might focus on who's pointing for certain spots, but everybody's pointing for Saratoga, right? Everybody wants to win up here. So why would I get overly caught up in that? I mean, you'll look at guys' success, but I mean, you could say, you know, take a guy like Brad Cox, who had a terrific meet here 2 years ago, right? It was 2 years ago. And last year basically sucked. Well, Brad's sort of figuring it out. So I'm sure Brad's coming up here and he's thinking, I am not going to repeat last year's debacle. But once again, here's Brad Cox, who's become a highly successful trainer, and he's clearly a trainer in the upswing. And he'll have Monomoy Girl running on Sunday. First really huge match of the meet, right, when she'll be meeting Midnight Bisou. Is it Midnight Bisou? I guess, mm-hmm. Right. So many names in my head, in the coaching club. You know, I'm sure that Brad is thinking, I'm going to do everything possible to have a much better meet than last year. One of the reasons that Brad started getting more attention was the meet that he had up here a few years ago. So I'm sure that he's going to be pregnant, but I mean, he'd also be the first one to tell you, that's not going to guarantee me success here. And any trainer will tell you that. They're all trying to get the right horses and trying to get them as primed and ready for their starts up here, but That doesn't mean you're going to win, because you're going against the best in all situations. You're not sneaking in wins too often, especially in more higher level races. So I imagine that Brad spent a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, how to improve on last year's results. And over time, I'm sure he will. But that doesn't guarantee success for any of us, right? We can all be as prepared as
right.
possible and still get completely trashed up here. So, you know, I try not to be distracted by that. And I just try to handicap. And you might think, you know, here's a horse that may be more suited or less suited to these two-turn races than a lot of the one-turn races we run at Belmont, particularly in mile turf races. Now the course is played, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to do things differently. I wouldn't know what to do differently.
Well, speaking of different and Saratoga, one of the things that has certainly become a standard at the season, and that is your Thursday radio show at Parting Glass, something that anybody coming to town, you really want to take part. 8 o'clock on Thursdays, and literally just a variety of guests that touch on all areas of life around here these 2 months.
I hope so. I hope people come by. It's been fun. We've had a great response to it, and it's been fun doing it. It's our seventh year. This Thursday, we're going to have Manny Franco, Nick Zito, and Saul Kuhlman will be joining us on Thursday. And Manny's never been on before. Nick was actually on my first show the first year we did it when we were still at Hattie's. And Saul was on, I think, 2 years ago with us, maybe even opening night then. And, of course, Saul, you know, who owns been a Monoy girl, but also just recently bought a piece of Midnight Visu. And I like Saul a lot, and we're friends, and he's a terrific guy. But I want to talk to him a little bit about, you know, sort of buying into pieces of horses and sort of how he operates in general from one end of the spectrum to the other. And he's always an interesting guy to talk to and a terrific guy. Anybody who knows Saul likes Saul. He's a hard, possible guy not to like. but, yeah, and I'm looking forward to having Nick on as well. And Nick certainly had his share of success up in Saratoga and been here for a long, long time in a lot of ways. He's the person that really started people in coming up to train in Saratoga in the off season, right? He was there much, much earlier than a lot of people. So that'll be great. And Manny's coming off a super meet at Belmont. He's really getting to the point where he's no longer pushing to be at the top. He's got himself to the top. He's a terrific rider and a terrific guy. And it's fun every week. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the season and trying to put together a list of, you know, who I want to get on and when we can get them on. And obviously some will be dictated by, you know, big races coming up, and try to get somebody who's in the big races that weekend. But it's been a fun show and been a good response, and enjoy it a lot.
Well, and when the sales roll around, you get, you know, it's interesting how you get different, you know, each week, each period has a certain vibe. You know, it's sales week, you get obviously the consigners through.
I'm going to have some yearlings on actually this year. Talking
excellent.
About what it's like to be a yearling.
that'll be fun. No, it's yeah. It's the
Stages
place will overflow crowd, and everybody just enjoys. And I always forget, Andy, who it's broadcast on what
ESPN
local station?
104.5 The Team. It's on a live when there's not a conflict with the Yankee game, which I think there are about three or four of the weeks. In that case, they play it, I believe, after the Yankee game, but they replay it in the morning as well. So there are ample opportunities. We also videotape them, and they're available on YouTube, but we're going to be recording them for the Across the Board podcast as well. So we'll be recording
nice.
Those every Thursday and getting those out by the next day and on our podcast. Try to tape a couple podcasts, too. I'm actually going to tape a podcast with Nick Zito on Thursday as well, so there's that. And it's hard, you know, you want to do all this stuff while you're up here, but there's just not always enough time to get things done. But at least, you know, this year with Naja Thompson's help, we're able to do a few more, and hoping to get a podcast with Andy Beyer when he's here the last week. And listen, you want to take advantage of everything you have up here, but it's hard sometimes to stretch yourself too thin. There just isn't always enough time in the day. But listen, it's great to be up here. We'll be starting our Saturday Live broadcasts. They'll be every single day. Most days will be 4 to 6:30. There's a couple of days where they're longer. Also, on days when NBC is here, which I believe is the Whitney, the Travers, and the last weekend, I think we come on before them doing races before. before they go on for their broadcast. So there'll be days when the vast majority of our racing will be available on national TV. We'll be on MSG Plus and Fox Sports 2 and Altitude Network out in the Denver area, but also a number of different outlets and RSNs. So that's been fun, and that's something that's grown. The usual cast of characters will be here as well. Of course, Greg Wolf and then Maggie Wolfendale and Paula Duke and Gabby Cadet and Tom Amos will be joining us a lot. Some different guests sprinkled in. Frank Miramonte is going to be on with me on Monday. I'm looking forward to that.
Nice.
I am a big fan of Frank's.
He's the best. He's just
Better people in racing than Frank Miramonte.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Maybe none. Besides you.
Well, and his health issues behind him, and happy for that. And
well, he's still insane. He's not.
Well, that's not going to change.
Insane.
There's no treatment for that.
Working on that with no help, no success.
I love it, Andy. We didn't talk actually after the Stars and Stripes, and let me get just a couple of quick thoughts because we didn't get to summarize last week coming back from vacation. A couple of summary notes about the Euro invasion and the way things Athena's surprise and more.
Oh, the Stars and Stripes card. Well, that was kind of a long time ago, right? We saw a really terrific race in the Belmont Derby between Analyze It and Catholic Boy, and
yep.
Sort of a race that didn't deserve a loser, but boy, Catholic Boy, I mean, they're in the early stages of a 3-year-old turf affirmed and Alidar battle, right, after the last two races. So that's exciting, and they'll hopefully expectedly meet up in the Secretariat on Arlington Million Day. The 3-year-old filly race, I think that it was sort of a disappointing. It was not nearly as impressive. I know the time was fast and a hard horse to like the winner, but there's always people that like every winner. And it's not as though Aiden Explainer Brian had much success, in, especially outside of Breeders' Cup races, and virtually none whatsoever with fillies or mares. That was his second one, including the Breeders' Cup, his other one being found in at least 5 years. Seemed a little random. She really ran well, but I think a lot of horses seemed to be a bit distance challenged late in that race. But it was a very fun day of racing. We gave away an enormous amount of money, but it was a fun day of racing.
Diversify. You bullish going forward? We're looking for competitors in the classic division, and especially with the questionable status of the Triple Crown winner. Can diversify?
I don't think his status is particularly questionable.
Yeah, I hear you.
Questions been answered. Diversify was sensational in winning the
Suburban.
The Suburban. I mean, what can you say? I mean, he the two best performances by Olders. I mean, the Met Mile was trip race New Jersey. And Mind Your Biscuits as well, but Accelerate out in California, I think was it the Santa Anita? The race at Santa Anita, whatever, it used to be the Hollywood Gold Cup. And Diversify were sensational performances. And I think the thing I would have from Diversify is, I think one of the reasons, I think we mentioned this on Sunday, that perhaps we don't see the same kind of overwhelming figs that we've seen in the past in a lot of these races. Everybody is so concerned with not using horses' best talents to their benefit and rating every horse you run, strangling them back and slow paces. And so it hinders the performances a lot of times of true speed horses. And with Brisbane, they just said, we're going fast. You want to try to keep up with us? You do what you got to do, but we're going to go fast as we can, and just kept running fast. And that was an exciting, scintillating performance. And it was reminiscent to me his performance late in the Saratoga meet in the, I think it was the Evan Shipman, late in the meet when I think
yes.
He got a 108 buyer that day. And he just went fast the whole way around. Diversify is, he's good. And when he gets to strut his stuff out there, he can be very good. I mean, don't forget he won the Jockey Club last year. And, maybe Impava was sort of coming along and it wasn't the strongest field ever, but it was still a nice performance. But his Suburban was a superb performance. And whether or not he can, and Rick Violet, his trainer, seemed to be hinting more likely to wait for the Woodward, give him more time. So I guess we're not likely to see him in the Whitney. But if he can reproduce performance like that in the Woodward, I don't see any reason he can't win that as well. And I got nothing but good things to say about Diversify. Doesn't mean I'm going to pick him in his next race, but he was sensational. I mean, that was one of the performances that may have been as good a performance we saw the whole meet at Belmont.
No, I can't argue, and had a lot, really had fun checking in with Rick, and you know, everybody very happy for, and not just for Rick, but also for Mr. Evans, who
I was happy for Ralph. I'm not happy.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm very happy for Rick. I consider Rick a friend, and love to see Rick do well. I like Rick. Rick's like me. Rick's ready to argue anything at any time, but he takes nothing personally. You know,
that's true.
Really,
it's very
okay.
True.
Rick is more than okay. I'm always thrilled to see him do well. And Ralph Evans as well, obviously, has been a great supporter of the game for many years and a terrific guy as well.
Well, Andy, looking forward to this afternoon when the overnight comes out and then the countdown to PP's being available for printing and perusing. And it should be a terrific 7 weeks, and starts on Friday, and we'll talk to you Labor Day.
what a dream that would be.
Well, wish everybody the best of luck, and the hardworking team that is busy bringing everything up from downstate and setting up, and they'll be ready for the.
They're the ones that work hard.
Yeah.
The people that bring the stuff up and set up and then take it back down and move it back down. I think they're the ones who work hard. So we all, we're lucky to be in a position where we have to work hard. We really are. And I think we all owe it. Every one of us that works in racing owes it to the fans to at least try to do the best job that you can. You know, and that's it's a pleasure to be in that situation, especially up here in Saratoga. I've been here for a week, and it's been great being here. Our lunch, not included, but other than that, everything's been really great.
For those that want to see the animated discussion, I'll put a link again to the YouTube.
You saying this wasn't animated?
This was animated. Yes.
Should I be more animated for you?
No, you were tremendous. There won't be one yawn complaint or toast eating complaint.
Well, I have any food here. If I had some food here, I've got no food in my apartment. So what can I do? Right? I get some so I can eat when I'm on the air with you.
Exactly. I love it. Andy, best of luck.
Later,
knock
Steve.
Him dead.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Andy Serling, everybody. The one and only. It's, you know, for him, he moved here. He moved to the Saratoga area from Princeton, where he grew up as a child. And he obviously had a great influence on his life. And it continues to be... special for him, and he's as great a band leader for this venue and for the Racing Association as there is, and provides insight that you really can't get anywhere else, and he takes a lot of grief for the way in which he is unabashed about his approach to the game. He's taught me. I've said many times how much he's taught me. Let's take top of the hour timeout. Dick Powell is going to join us. We got to talk about the week ahead and the week behind at Presque Isle, but Dick can do a couple of things with us as well. He is a Capital District Happy too, and his Saratoga experience and insight heading toward the meet. We also will utilize Dick as somebody who watched Manny Ikeza ride, and he's got a couple of thoughts. And we'll look to tomorrow to Georgie Velasquez and other guests who remember and appreciate the late Manny Ikeza, gone yesterday at age 80. And I know it's small consolation, but so many of his contemporaries and jocks that came, you know, shortly after him got to spend time together at the Jockeys and Jeans benefit at Canterbury. And as Tony Black said, and Tony certainly on Thursday we'll talk about Manny, but Tony said he never would have thought that seeing Manny Ikeza would he'd be seeing him for the last time, basically, at Canterbury weeks ago.
So there'll be an outpouring of respect for one of the, I mean, real competitors in modern racing history, Manny Ikiza. Let's take a timeout. Hour three, Dick Powell, John White, Jeremy Plonk. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.